Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we're joined by Dr. Kaz Ross, our resident expert on all matters Steve Bannon and Australian Nazi. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Kaz.
Yeah, great to be here.
I feel like every time these guys go for a walk, we talk to you. But this time they didn't even walk anywhere. They just stood.
Yeah, but it was an impressive sight, didn't you think? 70 men staunchly standing in front of the New South Wales Parliament for the endurance record of 10 minutes.
Oh, and an impressive backdrop as well.
Well, I have to say, as someone who comes from Melbourne, what is that building in New South Wales? That Parliament House just looks terrible. Should get something fancy like the Melbourne one.
So, well, there's been a lot of headlines over the past week. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. I feel like we've had 5 days of talk about how did this happen? Why did it happen? Do we need to ban masks?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I mean, how did we end up here? You know, in 5 days we've seen Nazis protesting outside the parliament, and 5 days later it's already jumped to we're banning this, we're banning that, we're banning this. I don't feel that this is a very measured and considered response from the New South Wales political machinery or possibly even the police, but certainly some very unfortunately rushed things are being said at the moment, which are setting the tone for the debate, which I don't think it's going in a great direction for the New South Wales government.
Kaz, there has been speculation in some quarters that given that the Nazis got the go-ahead from police, they should have known better, but perhaps they were allowing it to go ahead precisely in order to pass more repressive legislation. What do you make of that?
Yeah, look, this is a kind of conspiracy theory that goes around every time these guys do something daft and then we get more laws. I don't think that's the case. I think that for a CVE or countering extremism, violent extremism approach, for a CVE hammer, everything is a nail, right? And so there's a limited toolkit of what the state can do. And so the response is, they did something bad, we're really embarrassed, so now we need to crack down on them. We need to bash them with our CVE toolkit with, oh, we've only got one thing, and that's basically making new laws. I think in terms of the police response, far be it for me to be defending the police response or lack of response. But if I was assessing, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 protest applications a year, and I saw one that was, well, 50 guys standing for 10 minutes, they're going to do a few speeches, and then they're going to go on a Saturday morning outside the closed parliament in a not very busy part of town, I'd be kind of thinking that's a pretty low public order risk. And some people have said, well, it's really unfair because the Palestine supports wouldn't be able to get a permit. Yeah, because there'd be tens of thousands of people at those rallies. So I think from a public safety, if you think of safety just as in walking on the street or any chance of something flaring up or a fight breaking out, 67 guys for 10 minutes, yeah, it's not a big deal. The question is there a threat to public order where public order is broader than just the people on the road or on the footpath or nearby? And that's where we get into the very murky waters of what's hate speech, what's inciting hate speech, and this word I really hate, but destroying social cohesion. You know, what even is that? So I don't really want to defend the police, but I can kind of see how they approved it.
Would you like some tomato sauce with that boot, Kaz?
Yeah, look, it's I don't like it. I mean, I don't like Nazis, and I really don't like Nazis when I find myself having to, you know, stick up for the police in some way. Having said that, it's come out over the last few days instead of it was a snap decision and they just made the decision on the spot. Well, now we find out that practically everyone in Sydney seemed to have known about it within the government, where even the Premier Minns's own security staff were alerted. The legal team knew, various people in the police hierarchy knew, people in the parliament knew. So that's a lot of people who knew, and not one of them said, you know what, we better tell the boss because he's going to have an aneurysm. And then we saw that in action on Saturday afternoon where he was apoplectic. I don't think policy made on the run when you're in the glare of the cameras and you're reacting is very good policy. So I won't be supporting a ban on masks. In fact, I encourage people to wear masks, keep your flu to yourself, keep your COVID to yourself. So I think it's a, you know, we're in a really perilous situation. It's just another reason to not like Nazis, that thanks to them, more and more laws have been brought in.
I didn't need any more reasons. Kaz, we've been joking about masks. They've been talking about banning masks after this happened. I'm not entirely sure what a ban on masks would have accomplished here because nobody was wearing a mask, which is a little bit of an interesting development because we've seen a lot of these guys ballied up. And, I mean, you know, sunglasses, bucket hats. Was it parka weather on Saturday? I didn't think so in Sydney, but yeah, quite rugged up. Is a little bit masked up, but it's not a balaclava. What does it mean that the masks are coming off?
Yeah, this is another very good question. I just say on the question of mask off is that we've seen this played out in Melbourne when people who were counter-protesting the October 19 March for Australia in Melbourne found themselves face-to-face with cops who made them take off their masks and were checking who they were. So I think mask off means anybody from any side who has some sort of face covering that's not religious is going to be exposed if that's how the police feel on the day and that's what they choose to do. And the case of them not masking this time, I mean, were they not masked? I mean, okay, they weren't wearing masks, but they were in disguises.
Don't we all put up masks in our lives?
That's right. That's right. I think that clearly the sunglasses and the hats was their attempt to kind of disguise themselves. I don't know why they didn't wear silly mustaches as well. My kind of fashion advice to them would be, I think you need to standardize your sunglasses. And, you know, it's not a good look to be wearing your mum's sunglasses. I also think there needs to be some kind of, yeah, look, you can't be having your little jacket right up almost over your mouth and then your little bald head just poking out like an egg. I don't see how that gives the impression of a big intimidating Nazi. So I think they failed a bit on the intimidation front. But why do we see their photos? Why do we have these photos? How do we have these photos? So I think that we know that they do mask up. On the 8th of August in Melbourne, when 140 of them marched around the city and bashed a homeless man, they were wearing their masks. They were wearing their ballys or their mask, whatever they were wearing. We know that this is part of their philosophy, which is the idea that you don't know who all the men are. So they could be, you know, your husband. They could be your father. They could be your son. They could be, you know, your brother. And the idea is that they are every man. So there's a sort of a purpose behind it on why they mask up, apart from the obvious one, which is, you know what, society doesn't like Nazis, and if they find out you're a Nazi, they're going to tell you that. So to avoid the consequences of being a Nazi, you wear a mask, but also to look like the staunch black battalions, the men standing there staunchly, they wear masks. So why did they take them off this time? We've seen this before at March for Australia on the 31st of August. All around the country, the directive must have gone out. No masks. Wear sunnies, wear hats. And half the guys all over the country were in their black Helly Hansen gear. The other half were just in normal clothes. They couldn't have worn masks to that because this was their meet and greet, try to win over the dregs of the freedom movement and get the flag wits on side. And most people find balaclavas and things like that quite intimidating. So they had to go mask off and they went mask off. But that doesn't mean that that's their policy going forward. We know that the photo that they released from Saturday, it was pretty blurry. It was taken from across the road. You couldn't really see a lot of features. You could kind of work out the guys on either side of the banner. Yeah, Jack Eltis and Joel Davis, we know them, right? But you couldn't really see the detail. So just unfortunately for them, they got papped on the day. And tough luck, guys. So I think that instead of saying, wow, you know, they're so confident now that they've gone mask off, I think it's more like, yeah, they were going to blur it in post and they didn't get a chance to do it because somebody caught them first.
The general context, Kaz, for the Nazi rally is heightened public awareness about the dangers of anti-Semitism. And that, I think, seems to have been one of the things that informed the response by New South Wales Authority, because for the last few years, there have been a series of anti-Semitic attacks on Jewish institutions in Sydney and Melbourne and elsewhere, and understanding that these attacks are, and the sentiment, anti-Semitic sentiment, has increased considerably over this period. What's the connection, do you think, between this Nazi display outside Parliament and the general kind of atmosphere in which anti-Semitism is apparently becoming more prevalent?
I think there's 2 points in a response to that. The first is that, you know, the fable of the boy who cried wolf, right? So look, look, there's a wolf. People come running. There's no wolf. Look, look, there's a wolf. And then third time, nobody comes running and there's a wolf. That's what we experienced on Saturday, where we've had Premier Minns has been very quick to say that these anti-Semitic attacks that have been happening in Sydney, the caravan full of explosives and so on, were done by Nazis. Also, of course, smearing the pro-Palestine movement as well. So it's come out. No, Nazis didn't do it. And we all knew that, who watched them, because the swastikas were terrible. They couldn't draw them like swastikas at all. So you're like, come on, these guys have been drawing swastikas since they were 15. They know how to draw a swastika. So Minns has been saying, yes, yes, it's the Nazis, it's terrible, we need new laws. And suddenly it's revealed, well, actually it wasn't the Nazis who did that. And it was a whole different kettle of fish. So for Minns, this is the, see, I told you there were Nazis and here they are. Here's the Nazis. Now I get my chance to do all the things that I wanted to do before, but I couldn't because, you know, it wasn't really Nazis and whatever. So I think that's one element. The other element is, and look, I know what Cam's going to say. He's going to say, oh, now you're agreeing with Nazis. Why have we got this person on our show? But there is a very, very strong Zionist lobby in this country. And we've seen that media outlets like Sky News push this Zionist perspective consistently and constantly and endlessly and ad nauseum. And that right from the very beginning, after October 7, 2 years ago, we were suddenly going, hang on, what? There's private meetings between these lobby groups and the government. It's unclear the power that these lobby groups, the Zionist lobby groups, have in Australia. But no one can deny that they've had a very powerful influence over federal policy and at state levels. So in that way, the Nazis are not wrong to say, we need some more transparency around the Zionist lobby and we need to know what's going on. However, that's not what they said. They said, abolish the Jewish lobby. And of course, this is just some cunning way to get around hate speech laws. What they want to say actually is abolish Jews. That's what they actually want to say. So they wouldn't get a permit for that. So they've said abolish the Jewish lobby. I think this does cross a line. I think it's talking about religion rather than politics, and therefore, in my view, it is hate speech. So on one way, I'm agreeing with them. There is a Zionist lobby that's shown that it's very powerful. It has a lot of influence. And on the other hand, yeah, they did cross a line with hate speech.
They also crossed a few lines, it seems, when one of their members called on people to rape female politicians who disagreed with them. For all of the careful choosing of language, it seems that sometimes they're not being especially careful. I was wondering if you could speak to how you feel that that's sort of going.
Well, yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think that NSN's been going now for 5 or 6 years. And we see that different branches of NSN now are developing their own culture and their own style. So although it's a hierarchical organization, everything comes from the top, each organization conducts itself in its local circumstance. And so their behaviors, what they do and how they do it, differ. And there cannot be a stronger contrast between Melbourne and Sydney. In the case of Melbourne, we see March for Australia on August 31 was absolute shit show. There was violence from the start, Nazis were punching on, and in the end, of course, it was a brilliant success for NSN because here's Thomas Sowell, the man who went unconscious, had a conversation with Hitler when he electrocuted himself. Here's Thomas Sowell standing at a podium they made, modelled on Hitler's podium, addressing the crowds. The adoring crowds is how they would present it. So you'd think, yeah, great, got the win, go home. No, they didn't get the win. They went to Camp Sovereignty and they started punching.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. They allegedly did it. So a number of them have been charged. So let's look at the Victorian division. They've got charges for offensive behaviour, charges for stickering, charges for graffiti, charges for violence, charges for booing at the Anzac on Anzac Day at the dawn service. What else? What other charges have they got? They've got a few charges going on there, right? Look at Sydney. What charges have they got? Nothing. So we see here two, they're within the organisation, of course, Victoria's sort of like the mothership, but they have two really different organisational cultures, which is really interesting because they've been through a huge growth period in the last year or year and a half, massive. And we can see that in the Sydney rally because last time they had a rally on the steps of Parliament, nobody cared at all. They just went, did their 10-minute thing and went off and made some little videos or pictures or I didn't even know what they did. Nobody paid attention. Nobody even noticed. That time they had about 30 guys. This time they had nearly 70 guys. And I'd be betting a whole lot of those guys, this was their first foray into political action. So I think what we see is New South Wales very cautious, very, very cautious, don't want to run foul of the cops, want to work well with the cops, want to work within the system, want everything to be neat and tucked away and everybody to look good and be all dressed properly. Look at Victoria and it's a shit show. You know, just on the weekend, one of their members got into an altercation with a member of the public while just out walking with Jacob Hersant, the national leader. So after March for Australia, people in Melbourne in particular know who they are and they're recognising them and they're hassling them. They're telling them what they think. They're trolling them online. They're hassling them. In Sydney, it seems to me that this is kind of like NSN 4.0. So we had Nazi 1.0, which is your boneheads, romper stomper. Nazi 2.0 is like when you have an active club but you don't do politics. Nazi 3.0 is you've got an active club, so you tribe and train, you do politics. And in the case of these guys, they're moving into Nazi 4.0, which is basically we tribe, we train, we do politics, and we're professional. We look professional, we act professional. And I think New South Wales is leading the way. And quite honestly, Victoria just looked like a raggle-taggle collection of I don't know what. There's probably nothing I can say on the radio to express my view of them. So I think that the cultures of New South Wales and Victoria are very different. The leadership in Victoria, some of them are on non-association orders. Of course, Thomas Sewell is on remand as we speak, and he may be tomorrow, he may get bail. So basically, your question, this is a very long answer to your question, which is, one of the members was talking about raping politicians, female politicians. It's worth noting that that particular member comes from Sydney, has just come back from 2 years in Melbourne. So I guess it's an example of Melbourne chaos culture, the NSN in Victoria, that he's brought back to Sydney with him when he's moved back to Sydney. He said that he encouraged his followers on Telegram to go and rhetorically rape Allegra Spender. And when asked about it by Channel 9, he said, well, I'm not, you know, will you apologise for saying that, you want people to rhetorically rape Allegra Spender? His whole line was, well, look, you're going to get what you give out. It comes with the turf. So suck it up. But we know that they're deeply misogynistic, and we know that they joke about things like rape all the time. It's just a joke to them. A few years ago, Thomas Sewell was on a podcast in the UK, and he said, yes, well, about the so-called Muslim rape gangs, once we're in power, we will deal with these people who knew, the police or the judiciary or whoever, teachers or whatever, health professionals. We'll deal with these people. They will be men and women. They will be locked up and they'll be raped to death. So, of course, the UK hosts of the podcast were horrified, because that kind of language in the UK will get you a prison sentence. In Australia, we are a lot more lenient about that use of the word rape. But I think that that senior member of NSN to say that just goes to show how out of touch they are with what most people think. And I think a reasonable person would find that extremely offensive. And of course, it's just a sign for the Nazi troll army to go crazy and start smashing away on Twitter or what other social media that she's on.
Kaz, one voice that's been noticeably absent in the discussion about the Nazi rally and Nazism in general has been the special envoy to combat anti-Semitism. I've looked and I've not been able to find any statement at all with regards this matter that a lot of people are talking about and expressing great concern over. Do you think that's unusual?
When the envoy role first started, I thought, this is great. You know, this person, when the Nazis do something, they'll be right there in the moment. They'll be able to set the tone of the debate, stop all sorts of wild speculations or policy on the run. You know, it'll be a sensible voice and a voice for justice and an anti-Nazi voice. But every time they do a stunt, I'm waiting. I'm still waiting. I'm not hearing anything. I've heard nothing, in fact. All I've heard is that the special envoy has said, oh, no, I can't comment on individual events. So, yes, unfortunately, the special envoy is a huge disappointment, but probably really a lot of people didn't have very high expectations, right? I mean, given where the special envoy comes from, given her deep embedded in Zionist groups, we see that her attention has really been directed to the Palestine genocide and to protesting the Palestine genocide movement. That's where her attention's been directed, it appears to me. And we can see that in the report that she put out, where, you know, some of the cases of anti-Semitism, I don't know if a reasonable person will classify them as anti-Semitism. And even the New South Wales police themselves, they put out this massive report of all these terrible incidents of anti-Semitism, and then they had to walk it back by hundreds of instances because they weren't anti-Semitic at all and they just got it all wrong. So I think it's a mess. And quite honestly, I think both envoys should be abolished. I think it's ridiculous to have them. I would like to hear from other victims of the neo-Nazis, because we know, of course, that they're anti-Semitic, but they're also deeply misogynistic, deeply homophobic, racist in every way. They're ableist. They shame people for their bodies. this is their standard way of operating in the world. So they have a range of other victims apart from Jewish people. And I think it would be really great to hear from some of those other victims.
Kaz, just finally, we couldn't let you go without asking how Steve Bannon's going. What's he been up to lately?
Well, I think Steve Bannon's been going pretty good. But what I'm interested in is a very unfortunate piece of misinformation about Steve Bannon, which has flowed into the kind of centre-right Auspol field on Twitter. And this is one Twitter account started talking about enshittification. And so the idea of enshittification is, you two are probably familiar with it already, but the idea of it is that, you know, Facebook starts out and it's really good and it helps its customers and everybody's happy and it's all great. And then over time, to extract more profit, the platform actually gets shitter and shitter and shitter. In my, you know, field of academic research in China, this is known as fading. You know, you set up a relationship with your supplier in China, the first round of products are good, the second round are good, by the third round, the quality's starting to fall off a bit, and then, you know, by the fourth or fifth round, it's pretty shit. So when this was brought up in the Australian context in reference to the social media platforms, quite a prominent account said, well, you know, I think we need to use Steve Bannon's term, enshittification. Now, I thought, oh, this is just an ignorant person. But then I heard that political commentator, John McGowan, say, oh, yes, Steve Bannon and enshittification. I'm like, dude, you need to do your reading. This is Cory Doctorow. And I feel that that credit needs to go to the left where it's due rather than to the right. Personally, Steve Bannon's participation in politics is a form of enshittification in my view.
Oh, didn't he give us Flooding the Zone, which is slightly different?
He did give us Flooding the Zone with shit. That's the point. So he is the living embodiment of enshittification at work, an active agent of enshittification.
Kaz, thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us about all of the latest walking. Hopefully we won't be having to talk to you for a little bit.
Yeah, sadly, I think the Nazis aren't going away, but who knows? I mean, after March for Australia, they received a lot of very unwanted attention from the public, and long may that continue.
If people want to find you, they can find you still on Twitter.
Look, somebody's got to do it, Cam. Somebody's got to be out there fighting the good fight. At the moment, I'm still on there.
At Tassie Kaz. Andy, that is our show. We will see you next week.
We will. Thanks.
Hello there, I'm Virginia from The Gardening Show. What if there was a viable solution to climate change? Treasured Perennials Nursery are sponsoring a screening of Kiss the Ground documentary, exploring how, through our soils, we can stabilise the Earth's climate, restore lost ecosystems and provide future food security. A mini event with stalls, demonstrations and a Q&A session. It's going to be at Fernie Creek Horticultural Society, which is in Hilton Road in Sassafras, on November the 15th, 11:30 to 4 p.m. Tickets will be $15.50 through TryBooking. Head to trybooking.com and search for Kiss the Ground. All proceeds, of course, are donated to 3CR. Treasured Perennials Nursery is a 3CR supporter and regularly appear on The Gardening Show.
The annual Melbourne Pacifica Festival is on again, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, December the 6th, at the playground end of Banjo Paterson Park in Lynbrook. Immerse yourself in the richness of Pacific Island culture with traditional dance, dynamic drumming, soulful harmonies, bands, guest artists, children's activities including rugby clinics, Pacifica arts and crafts, and yummy food. Lots of fun and activities for the whole family. Saturday, December the 6th in Lynbrook. Visit melbournepacificafestival.org. Melbourne Pacifica Festival is a 3CR supporter.